Hello, entrepreneurs.
Welcome to IP 101. My name is Kim Rademeyer.
I'm John from Fearon. We're from Rademeyer Attorneys.
The other day, one of my clients phoned and said, can their trading name be the same as their trademark? I think it's something that comes up quite often because people want to know, are they allowed to have the same company name as their trademark? Would it make a difference in the outside world, in marketing? And I thought maybe we could just talk about that.
Probably the first thing to do is to define the two. What's the difference between a trading name and a trademark? Most of the time you would have a separate entity like a P2O Limited or a CC, and that would be XYZ P2O Limited, and your trademark may not necessarily align to that. If you have different goods or service offerings, that may be something that would have a different trade name, different label. There may be a difference. So to answer the question simply, one doesn't need to use a trading name as a trademark and vice versa. A trading name would be sometimes a holding company that keeps the IP, keeps certain trading assets, that sort of thing, while the actual trademark or the label of the product or service could differ completely from that. So it doesn't have to be the same. Sometimes it is.
Okay. I just think sometimes the marketing guys would get upset because then they have like
two things. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Perhaps it would strengthen it if you had the company name the same as the trademark.
It would, yes. But if you have an arbitrary example, if you wanted to sell cola and your main product line is to do with stationery, how would you then make that leap? So it's something you have to bear in mind. If you are a pharmaceutical company and you're offering cream for fungal infections and then you want to do antibiotics or something like that, it may not want to be the same thing. And also that sort of limits you in terms of your product offering. You can't open a, well, I suppose you can, but open a P2O Limited and have a trading name for each and every company.
Mm-hmm. Although I think it's very important that the company name is subject of a trademark.
Yes.
And then you have, if you have a separate trademark, that trademark is a subject of a separate trademark application.
Yeah, agreed. And if you have a company that, for instance, manufactures products, that company name would be trademarked in respect of manufacturing services, where the physical products themselves, whatever products they are, would be trademarked as goods and the names of those goods, which exist separately to the manufacturing company.
Mm. And I think then on the bottle or the item itself, there could be XYZ, P2I Limited produces this, or this is a trademark of XYZ P2I Limited.
Yes.
Because there is that link then, because then you know where your goods are coming from or your services.
Something that I mentioned in that discussion with was pharmaceuticals. So another very topical question comes up and even sometimes is misunderstood by professionals in the industry, such as pharmacists or doctors. And the person who receives the medication is obviously most of the time the person who's least informed about this, is the difference between an original pharmaceutical, original medicine, a generic medicine, and a clone. And this is sometimes thrown over the counter at Dis-Chem or clicks and you don't understand what the person's saying. However, most of the time you would just agree to it based on price because the generic is most times far less expensive than the original medication.
But what's the difference?
Essentially, a generic is a medication or a type of medicine. The patent has lapsed. So there's a 20-year period that a patent protects pharmaceuticals, a certain composition of ingredients that create that medicine. Once that 20-year period has lapsed, it falls into the public domain and they don't have proprietary rights to it, meaning anyone and everyone can copy it and they have the exact formulation. It's basically taking that ingredient list and how it is made, copying it, giving it a different trademark. So the formulation, everything is, it should be the same. The reason why it is a lot of the times cheaper than the original, which will continue to be sold under the original trademark. For instance, like Augmentin, and you get Augmaxil. Original one had to put in a lot of money for the research and development costs. And they're going to have a limited monopoly for 20 years. So they can charge what they want, essentially. You don't have a choice. Once that lapses and this generic comes along, undercuts them by a long margin. This is where a clone comes in, because a clone is different from a generic. A clone is the original pharmaceutical company that has the patent, creates the same medicine and gives it a different trademark in order to price it at a different price point. So they're competing with the generic. Obviously, once the patent lapses and they're selling Augmentin for 700 Rand and the generic is 200 Rand, how can they compete? Medical aids will never dispense the original medicine. Basically, what they do is they create a medicine that is the same, exactly the same as the original, maybe from a different company, but it's a related company, and then they sell it at the same price as the generic. The original manufacturer of Augmentin, they're calling it something different. and they're competing at the same price point as the generic to try and get some sales in it and also get the medical aids to dispense that medicine.
If I'm a customer at Dis-Chem Clicks or an independent pharmacy, I have an option of three different medications I can get.
Yes, at least three. And at the end of the day, this is something that benefits the consumer because it's driving the prices down. That patent period where they have 20 years of a monopoly, they can charge whatever they want for. When aspirin was patented many years ago, you would have a headache. You could only have aspirin. If they wanted to charge you R1,000 for it, you had no choice. Otherwise, you have to look at something else. The competitive nature and the fact that they have to constantly compete with one another and the expiry of the patent and so on, and clones versus the generics, the consumer is the one who benefits at the end of the day. But to answer your question simply, yes, there's at least three options that will be presented to you most of the time when it comes to medication.
But I'm sure this just also creates issues in the pharmaceutical world.
Yes. So a lot of people...
with counterfeits and things like that.
Yes. A lot of people believe that a generic isn't the same. And to a certain degree, there may be differences because they have the formulation and how it is made. And they are basically, for want of a better word, copying that. But certain elements like a fast-dissolving film may differ slightly, so it may have different effects in how long it lasts, how long it takes, things like that. But for the most of it, it's ingredient for ingredient match to the original. So there's no harm really in having a generic, and that's why these companies have to create clones, because otherwise they wouldn't compete. They would have 20 years and they would have to stop making that medicine because they can't sell it anymore. They're being way undercut by the generics.
Generally speaking, people don't understand that generics are the same. It's just a different trademark and the patent has lapsed.
Yes.
I think people are under the misapprehension that when you get a generic, it's a lesser quality or doesn't not going to do the job.
Especially because it's priced low at a lower price. Yes. Which is incorrect. So the composition in terms of ingredients, it's identical.
But I mean, this is a big topic that we can talk about.
Yep. Yes, definitely.
Because it definitely leads into counterfeiting as well.
Yes. Obviously, with counterfeiting, just to touch on that, that's a issue which can be extremely dangerous. If you think about someone who's trying to make counterfeiting, if the simplest way to describe it is someone is trying to copy existing medication and sell it for a cheaper price. There's no quality control. They're not really doing the same process. It's not a big pharmaceutical company that has to go through all these rigid tests to make sure that it's okay for human consumption. Then they're selling it on the market for a fraction of the price. The communities that are often in a lower socioeconomic status are the ones that suffer most. They realize that the medicine is R300, but they can get it for R30, yeah. Or at least it looks on the face of it to be the same. And when you are messing with Schedule 5, Schedule 6 medication, which is, if used incorrectly, can cause a lot of damage, death, and things like that, counterfeiting medication and pharmaceuticals is a huge problem because of how unaffordable medicine can be. It is an essential need. A lot of people, you need that medication to live. And if you, under the false pretense, buy counterfeit medication or pharmaceuticals, there can be a lot of problems from that. So that is something that is becoming a really big problem. It's increasingly becoming more and more.
More in the pharmaceutical industry,
yes.
Definitely.
Yes, definitely.
But I think that's something we'll have to do an in-depth about.
Yes, a very wide topic, so you can speak a long time about that. The main differences that you'll see from a customer's perspective in terms of this medication when it is provided to you on the counter, the trademarks that are going to be on there. So you're going to have the different names, and that's what's going to identify. This one is a generic, that's the original, that one's a clone.
That just shows you the strength of a trademark.
Definitely, yeah. Mm. And you get many different types of trademarks, trademarks that are what we would refer to as traditional versus a non-traditional trademark. Examples of traditional trademarks will be like a word mark, which is plain text, using it in text in a sentence. You get logo trademarks, you get tagline trademarks, that's just as a few examples, and then you get a little bit more arbitrary trademarks like container trademarks, shape trademark, even smell and taste. In some territories, they are registrable.
And sound?
When thinking about a trademark, one doesn't necessarily think, one thinks of, you know, Coca-Cola, just the word, or Nike, just the word, maybe the swish from Nike. However, there's oftentimes many more different forms of trademarks that can apply and do apply that can be protected. And once you have that protection, it's something that you can enforce and prevent others from springboarding on your reputation and hard work and marketing and advertising and so on. Very difficult to get some trademarks because there's a requirement that it needs to be capable of distinguishing your goods or services from those of others. So off the bat, how do you prove that a sound that nobody has heard distinguishes your goods and services from others?
However, if you think about Netflix, we all have Netflix.
Well, you see, that's the thing. It's been around for such a long time. It is that sound that is recognizable. And at the same time, then if you had nothing else but that sound, you would be able to immediately recognize what it is and what it's related to. And that's really what you need to prove in order to get one of these non-traditional trademarks through to registration. A consumer provided with nothing other than that specific sound, smell, taste, shape, container will be able to immediately associate the origin of those goods or services without that just starting off. And that's why a non-traditional trademark from the beginning, from the get-go, in terms of an entrepreneurial perspective, don't yet apply most times because you do not have that reputation. You do not have that goodwill and standing in the market. That's something that comes at a later stage.
So starting out as an entrepreneur, I must look for the simplest way.
Yes, yeah, so word, so traditional word, logo, tagline, trademarks are going to be the most important because once you start getting into the marketplace, that's what people are going to see. Then they're going to start relating the experience from your goods or services back to those original trademarks. And then you can expand from there with your sound trademarks and things, which you will have from the very beginning. But in terms of seeking protection for those non-traditional trademarks, that's something that would come at a later stage.
And then eventually one can even drop the word mark and just use your logo or your device and be identified by that.
Yes. So in a age where concentration and attention span is becoming less and less and less, people are more focused. They want to be able to get what they're looking for in a shorter span of time. So if you're writing a three-word trademark in order to get someone to remember what goods or services they're buying, they read the first one and they're going to forget the next two. They're going to shorten it themselves. For you to be Nike, but without saying Nike, with that little swish or the three stripes for Adidas or the Puma logo, that's ultimately the goal. Association, you want the consumer to make that jump by themselves. They don't just have to see the word. They're going to associate the logo with the word and then realize who it is. But again, that's very difficult to do straight off the bat. Mm-hmm. You'd be using a logo along with your word mark. But once that association has been made in terms of the consumer's eyes, then to drop the word and to go back to the logo alone, it will help you. It's a lot simpler and for recognition and for strategy in terms of marketing as well.
It's very prevalent now with all our apps that we have on our phones. I mean, the thumbnail is usually a logo and people are associating whatever the app is with that thumbnail on their phones for the app.
Yes, and that can only be so many pixels. And so you can't put the entire two or three words in that. It would be a thumbnail symbol or logo.
So how does that differ from copyright, though? Copyright exists automatically, as we know. Copyright's quite a gray area for most people.
Yes, it is. It is definitely. So there is some overlap in terms of the differences between copyright and trademarks. However, copyright mostly exists. It's a non-registrable right. It's not something you can apply for and receive a registration certificate. It's not something that's necessarily renewable, such as a trademark. It applies to artistic works, literary works, broadcasts of a signal, and then that sort of thing. There's many different forms. However, it works hand in hand with the trademark. It's not necessarily the recognizable name of a product. However, the composition and how the packaging looks and the use of information and how it is placed, the wording used when it comes to things like music, the lyrics and contents of letters and books and emails and images captured by photographers and so on. That's where copyright really comes into play. So, like I say, slight overlap with trademarks. However, it's essentially protecting a different thing where a trademark is specifically a badge of origin that is used for a consumer to associate goods or services with the person who originally created that, so the proprietor of the goods or services. That association and the specific experience with that product or service, that's the role of a trademark, to distinguish it in the marketplace from your competitors. And copyright is more of a background form of intellectual property when it comes to software. Like the lines of code and things like that is what is protected automatically by copyright. So it's basically to protect the written form of an author's
creative.
Yes, yes. Mm. It is more that sort of behind the scenes type of thing. And a lot of the times, people don't even know copyright exists until it's too late. Mm. Then they get into issues where you're using a work from a university or you haven't cited it correctly, lyrics from a song after publishing the song or posting it once you've created it without realizing that there are rights entrenched in those lyrics. Copyright is a very gray area, as you mentioned. You need to understand how it works, especially if you're in the music sort of artistic photographic field. Software, step on someone's toes by using two lines of code from the Facebook Meta app, you're going to get into trouble. There's things that you're going to run into. There are exceptions when it comes to this. And in South Africa, we have something called the fair use exception. in other countries, it's called fair dealing. It's essentially if you use someone else's work that is protected by copyright for private or personal study, for non-commercial purposes, essentially not to make money, research purposes, that sort of thing, it is deemed as a defense for copyright infringement if you do get into trouble. It's not to encourage people to make use of other people's copyright work. However, if there is an issue and you can prove that you're using it for personal research purposes and not commercial, you don't have a commercial gain, you're not making money off someone else's intellectual property, that is something that is almost excusable in terms of the laws. It is a defense, not an absolute defense, but is something that does apply. Obviously, there's always a fine line between intellectual property allowing a limited monopoly for the proprietor and stifling the development of an industry. Because if there was rights which you aren't allowed to use for study and research purposes, it would prevent the development of certain industries purely because it was protected. That balance that intellectual property has to try and strike.
I know that we always tell our clients to put the copyright disclaimer on the copyright notice because of copyright being such a gray area. So at least there's an identifiable date. So if somebody were to object to them making use of whatever they're making use of, at least there's a date that we can look at as a line in the sand, so to speak, so we can see from when their rights started running. I always say to the clients that copyright is the copyright notice and the copyright disclaimer is more like a sign that says keep off the grass. So at least you're putting it out there and it's up to you as the owner to monitor if somebody's making use of it. And it becomes quite onerous sometimes.
Yes, it is.
We've had a situation where somebody was going to be sued for using a photograph of a mushroom in their field, and the artist was based in Europe. They were going to sue our client for quite a lot of euros because of the copyright infringement. And they were using it completely differently, this picture of the mushroom. They were using it for catering services. They wanted to show that they were catering, but it turned out into quite an ugly fight because the artist in Europe was very upset about this. I don't know. He was obviously monitoring use of his mushrooms. Yeah, I think copyright isn't taken seriously enough.
No, definitely not. And in this digital age where everything is accessible online, if you were to download a pirated or non-legitimate copy of any software, there are ways and means that that proprietor, that software company, tracks your downloadings, your IP address, your usage, and will enforce it in terms of their copyright and
we've
tell you to cease and desist
yeah.
as well.
Yeah,
yes.
We've dealt with that as well.
Until you pay their licensing or royalty fees, which is normally a yearly subscription that you need to do to pay to use that software. So if you're getting it from a non-legitimate source, they have ways and means to enforce that. So copyright is very important as well.
And ignorance is not a defense.
No, it's not. No, it's not. You can't say that you didn't know that you don't have to pay for Microsoft or one of those programs. Something that also comes across very often is a lot of people, again, with the sort of digitalization and everything being online and shopping from home and being able to purchase everything online without actually having to go to a brick and mortar store, e-commerce or dropshipping types of businesses that start up, and the role of intellectual property in such a startup. When one is starting out, it's quite simple to do a dropshipping or e-commerce website. Not even a website, if you're just using one of the bigger platforms to list, to buy products from wherever you're sourcing them from, to rebrand them or create them yourself and to sell them onto consumers and use that platform that's already well established. We get a lot of clients who come to us when it's unfortunately too late and they've already got themselves into trouble. They're using a trademark for a brand that is established, that is listed on the same e-commerce website or perhaps monitoring that website. And these e-commerce platforms are getting, the local ones are getting a lot better in terms of regulation, ensuring that the people who are selling on using their platform have registered intellectual property rights. If you do not, I know with the established overseas e-commerce platforms, if you cannot prove that you have registered trademarks, rights, and other forms of intellectual property, they refuse to let you list those products. And when it comes to enforcement, if you can prove that you have that trademark, for instance, and another consumer wants to undercut you and sell the same product, a lot of the times products are being imported cheaply from overseas, they brand it with their specific trademark and they sell it at a markup from what they imported it on. So that's not a very big barrier for entry for a competitor to do the same. With that registered trademark right, they can immediately have those listings removed and or take further action against those. They don't even allow them to list once they've automatically picked up that that trademark is owned by you.
They, power of a trademark.
Yeah, they'll prevent people from listing using that trademark. Like I say, the South African local e-commerce platforms, they are the ones who actually do the enforcement and prevent those people from, because of their intellectual property policies and so on that they have to abide by, they don't allow people to infringe others' intellectual property on their e-commerce, because then it's liability, all sorts of liability issues that they run into. Are they the ones that are allowing the copyright infringement, trademark infringement to take place because they provide the e-commerce site? It's all sorts of things that they want to try and sort of get away from. Intellectual property and e-commerce and that sort of online sales is very important. Not that it's not important in other fields, but becoming very apparent for us that these problems appear before intellectual property rights are set in place, before trademark has been filed, before it's been registered. A lot of the times people get beat to it. They list a product on an e-commerce platform. Someone comes across it, likes the trademark, does a bit of research, gets that trademark filed, doesn't necessarily disclose that they're not the bona fide proprietor. First to file, when the original proprietor wants to file a trademark, they're going to be blocked by the person who's filed it before them. Not that that's allowed specifically in terms of our trademarks laws, but it does happen all the time. And then it's a case of having to try and undo that to get your rights on the register.
It's easier to start properly than to try and undo something.
Yes, just crossing your T's and dotting your I's from the very beginning, before you get to market, before you show the consumers what you're offering, what your trademark is. The sooner you get it protected, the better. There was something like a registrable right, like a trademark. The date of your filing is presented on your certificate, which is the date your rights begin running in terms of the Trademarks Act and statutory laws, which is very, very simple for enforcement type of issues. It makes our jobs a lot easier at the end of the day, because if someone says they started using it on the 1st of February 2020, and you can prove that you filed in January 2020, your registration certificate predates the rights that they say they have. So that argument is then disposed of. Whereas when it comes to copyright, it becomes a very difficult...
He said, she said.
Yes. When did you use this first? When was it first published? Very difficult. Whereas registrable rights, it's like trademarks, patents, designs, that sort of thing. The date of the filing on the registration certificate provides prima facie evidence that your rights began at that date. This is very good for enforcement.
Yeah. Thanks for the chat. Great to catch up on what you've been doing this week.
And you.
I'm sure we'll get lots more questions this week.
I have no doubt.
If there are any questions that anybody needs answered, you can WhatsApp your voice note to 083-294-9025 or to info@radamere.co.za. See you next time.
See you next time.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.